All right.
Excellent. Okay, Selena. Jill. Ariel.
Here.
Jennifer.
Here.
James.
Here.
Craig can't make it. Liz. Ruth.
Here.
Sophia.
I'm here.
Miranda.
Here.
Tariq. Riley. Marshall.
I'm here. I'm here. Sorry.
Oh,
This is
Riley's here.
Riley. Yeah, I'm here.
And Marshall.
I'm here.
Charlie. Luis. Zach just beeped Zach, we're doing roll call. Let's make sure he actually, yeah, Zach is here. Jonathan.
Here.
Okay. Rocio can't make it. Okay, it looks like we have quorum. Co-chairs, Sophia and Marshall, if you'd like to call the meeting to order.
Yes, I move to call the meeting to order.
I second.
Great. Zoom reminders for those of you who are new to this. We can't have keep your camera on if you can, mute on, use your raise hand function. We can't have substantive discussion in the chat. And we will give preference to members over observers in discussion, but we will call in observers time permitting. Approving past minutes. Are there any corrections or edits that anybody noticed? Okay, and that means that there's consensus support to approve the past meeting notes. If we can have the motion by the co-chairs.
I'll move to approve the past meeting notes or minutes.
I second.
Okay, approved.
All right.
And now we're going to review the, Ryan will review today's agenda.
Thanks, Tani. Thanks, everybody. Today we are going to be hearing from Blake Olofsson from City of Tucson Traffic Engineering, just giving us an overview on pedestrian crossing treatments, including HOCs and RRFBs. We are going to have a discussion following up on something that was brought up at a previous meeting about like sort of small dollar projects and whether or not we want to kind of keep coming to the committee for small projects, or if there's some maybe some threshold or some criteria that it might make sense for us to streamline that process. And then we have a funding request for enhanced bike lanes on Tucson Boulevard. That project is getting underway with repaving shortly. So those are the main highlights.
Any questions? Okay, and we are now, we want to gauge, make sure that everybody's available for the summer meeting dates. And so if you can open up your calendars.
I'll put the dates in the chat.
I'm going to launch this as a poll. You can select all that apply. One second. So just check all the dates that you are likely or definitely able to make. If you could just take a minute. And this is only for members to respond. All right, so we have, all right. So if all 10 members have responded, it looks like we have exactly the same amount. If you are, it looks like one person can't come to each, but we have at least 9. So it looks like we'll have quorum. So I think that's helpful. Okay.
And Liz just joined.
Oh, great. So why don't you, if you, since there was only a few of you, if you were unable to make one of those, if you could just put it in the chat, not June 25th or whatever it is, just so we have an idea. Okay. So the first thing we want to do is the call to the audience. Those of you who are observers, AKA audience, if you are going to want to use 3 minutes to make comments to the CSCC, could you raise your hand?
Or speak up if you don't know how to raise your hand.
Otherwise, I'm not going to read all of the rules for this if we don't have anybody who needs to speak. Okay. All right, let's move on.
I'm sorry. I do want to have a call to the audience, but I don't know what the hand is for the chat.
No problem. Thanks for speaking up. Is this Chris?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Why don't you introduce yourself, and then you can make your comments.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. Yes, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm with the Julia King Neighborhood Association. Our boundaries are 22nd Street. Let's see, let me have my little notes here. 22nd Street, Al Vernon, Tucson. It's Country Club and Aviation Parkway. Okay, so I'd like to thank Sam Credio for informing me about the meetings and attending. So this is my first one because I've been asking for help, of course, on getting improvements on Country Club between 22nd Street and Aviation. Okay, at the time that the Aviation Parkway was being constructed almost 30 years ago, we were told that major improvements on Country Club between 22nd Street and Aviation was part of the construction, which was including the repaving, drainage system, curbs, sidewalks, lighting, and sheltered bus stops. So, of course, to this day, it's never been completed. The only thing that's been done is the repaving. So several years ago, the north side of 22nd Street on Country Club had all these major improvements completed. They had the sidewalks, the lighting, the bus stops, and so forth. But of course, the south side has still not been done. So I've been sending emails to the City of Tucson Transportation, to the Ward 5, trying to find out what to do, how can we get on the list, to have that stretch. It's only like less than half of a mile, and to get it improved, because we really need the drainage for sure. It's like a river on the east side of Country Club in that area. So I've completed surveys, tried to get that area on the list, and so I'm trying again. Hopefully we'll have something done this time. So anything else I need to complete? Or is that sufficient?
No, that's good. Thank you for sharing your concerns. And we can't take it up as in there's not time for responding this agenda, but we'll be able to reflect on it afterwards. Oh, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much for listening. Uh-huh.
Okay. And anyone else? Any other observer comments?
I forget. Are we allowed to follow up with an email? With the information.
Say that again.
Are we allowed to follow up with an email with more information on that if somebody brings something?
I would think so. Patrick?
Ryan, why don't you handle this one?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not an email that involves a quorum, a group email that involves a quorum, I think that would be okay.
So, can you put your email in the chat or send it to Chris somehow?
Hey, are you asking me to send the email, or someone's going to send me an email?
Why don't you put Ryan your email in the chat, and Chris, you can email Ryan, and he can move things forward that way.
Yeah, I put my email in there. So Chris, just drop me an email and I'll connect you with Sophia.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So the next agenda item is a new standing agenda item for the CSCC, which is called Current Events Call to Committee, sharing on relevant Complete Streets related events in the community. So if any of you know of events, newspaper articles, anything that's relevant that you want to be able to share, we might not take the t full 10 minutes, but there was a proposal to open this up. Anybody have anything relevant?
Yes. So last time we used this time to share something that was an article in the news about transportation in Tucson. And I think it was specifically about fatalities caused by cars in Tucson. And so my own update is I'm a part of FUGA, Families United Gaining Accessibility. And just a few months ago, a couple months ago, I actually don't know where I'm at with timing, but one of our members was seriously injured by a car while trying to cross the overpass of the highway. What happened was that somebody who was trying to quickly get onto the highway totally hit him, hit them, and then hit them again because they didn't realize that they first thought that they were under the car, and then the second time is when they hit them, and that was because they were driving them over. And so FUGA is an organization who's committed to the visibility of people using bikes. Walking, rolling on the south side and the west side. And that's just something that I think is important when, we hear the stats, and it's important to remember those are our family members, friends, community members, neighbors. And that's why we're showing up to this meeting, is because we want safer streets for the people of Tucson. And so, yeah, I'm hoping that we can remember that when we get projects and we're not sure if it's really pedestrian or bike user or chair user focused. I think we have to remember that. So thanks y'all for listening. And definitely, it's our second member of FUGA who's been hit by a car. And I think one of the takeaways is really also to listen. Like the city, all of us who are here on this council need to listen to the people who are saying stuff and who are pointing out what's missing and wrong with our transportation infrastructure. Because this member had been talking about how dangerous that pass was for a very long time. And so it's important that we take that feedback seriously.
Thanks, Sophia. And sorry about those accidents. Other Events, current or upcoming, that anyone wants to share? Okay. So let's go to the first topic, which is crossing treatments overview. HOCs, RRFBs. We should have a trivia quiz of who remembers what that means. And this is a Blake Olofsson from Traffic Engineering that the city is going to has a presentation. Just a reminder that we only have 15 minutes for the presentation because there's an interesting 15-minute discussion. Sophia, I believe you were the one who brought this topic to the agenda. I don't know if you want to say anything before Blake speaks.
I wanted to understand how effective each of the crossings were in Tucson. We make budgetary decisions on these, and sometimes I wonder if, you know, we save up for a more effective crossing on the south side. When you hit the hawk button, there's plenty of cars who will just blow through the light. And so hearing more about what is the design, what is the research on these different types of crossings, I think is helpful to then as a council decide what is most effective and where is it appropriate.
Okay, so Blake, you should be able to share your screen. Thanks for coming. And we can't hear you. Are you speaking? Not yet. Can you say something?
Yeah, I don't think we're hearing them.
No.
Like moving.
Can you hear us? Now you're on mute. Now you're off mute. But no, oh, no audio. Maybe you can go to your audio icon and click on that to your audio settings and make sure they're set appropriately. And we could just.
Can you hear us?
I think he can hear us. He's smiling. Not yet.
No.
The audio settings would be where what you adjust. Which speaker?
Like the button, the icon in the bottom left that says mute or unmute. There's a little up arrow right next to it where you could select different settings.
And it would be in the microphone area at the top. So we could switch topics and proceed and then let you try to, maybe Colleen, you could even, I don't know. Or Ryan, maybe you could help.
Put me in a separate room with Blake, Tani, and I can try and troubleshoot it.
Okay. So meanwhile, we'll just go to the next topic and then we'll come back to Blake. So the next topic, I'll put you there in a second. Next topic is discussion of small project 411 funding authorization. And Ryan and Patrick are going to give an overview of this. This is discussion and decision, if you agree on what they'll explain. Go ahead.
Thank you. So this agenda item, this is in response to some discussion that I understand happened at a meeting a few months ago. And, you know, the idea essentially is that, you know, we have some opportunities often to kind of piggyback on repaving projects and make some small improvements that are relatively small dollar. And I think the question was raised, is it worth the CSCC's time for, you know, for you all to be considering you know, small dollar projects, as long as they're, you know, meeting the criteria and the goals of the Prop 411 safety funding. So we just wanted to come back and have a discussion and sort of see if you all have ideas about if it's, I guess, if it's okay to, sorry, let me back up. If you would want us to have some criteria, essentially, you know, whether it's a dollar threshold or a type of project, that you would be okay with essentially granting us approval in advance to advance, you know, small dollar projects, so that we can be responsive, so that we're not coming to all with really small dollar stuff, you know, $10,000 here, $50,000 there. If there's a way that that can be done, whether there's a dollar threshold, whether there's sort of a trial period that we test it out, and if it works, great. The idea would be that we would be reporting to you on each of these, letting you know when this comes up, how much we're looking at, and you know how it fits the criteria for 411 funding. So that's kind of the spiel, and I guess I'll open it up for discussion.
Yeah, and I'll say that I'm going to just share screen right away. We have a basically like a whiteboard that would be for you to have conversation about this in light of potential criteria and any process related steps. So I'm going to just do that now.
And just to be clear, you know, I'm fine with, I think we're fine with coming to you and seeking your permission individually for individual small dollar stuff. This is really, if this is something that you all want to take up, you know, basically just get kind of these small dollar authorizations, you know, off the agenda so that they're not taking up so much time.
James.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering how often this comes up, like how much time is being taken, maybe as a percentage of the full CSCC meeting to these types of items.
I think Patrick might be able to add more detail, but my understanding is that there's been one previous request that kind of triggered this discussion, and then we have a request for about $15,000 today that would also fall under that category. You know, it's hard to say right now. I think how often this would come up. It's possible that as the collector program moves forward, as Prop 411 repaving projects move forward, we might have some opportunities that pop up. It's hard to get a sense of right now. So that's kind of why I floated the idea of maybe we could do it as a trial and just kind of see how it works out, see how often it's coming up. Yeah.
Ruth and Miranda.
I think I brought this up at the last meeting because there was a project that was fairly small dollar, and I would be supportive of setting an amount of, like, I'm thinking $100,000, that any project that's an enhancement of a bike lane, pedestrian facility, lighting, what else can I think of, those types of, what I'm going to say, accessibility type projects, anything less than $100,000 would it need to come to the CSCC? That's what I would propose.
Miranda.
I was pretty much going to say the same thing as Ruth. I was going to say $100,000 and suggest that it be things that clearly fall under, you know, sort of the category of safety improvements and things around accessibility. I would be supportive of a trial period. I think where my mind is going is that I think that the more projects within the city of Tucson that are complete, the better, and that we don't have a lot of time in these meetings. And so I anticipate more projects coming up and more opportunities to really be able to be involved with things like design. And so I want to make the best use of our time. So I'm supportive of it.
Riley?
I was actually going to say the opposite, that I would prefer to see the proposals each week and like know what's going on and have a say. I think it was hard for me to see what the problem was that we're addressing with this proposal. Like, was there a backlog of small projects that we were holding up? Small, and I think 100,000 to me sounds like quite a bit of money. But so I was more on the other side where I was like, I prefer to keep seeing these things, and I don't know if there's a way to expedite them in our meetings if they so that we can focus on bigger design questions. I hadn't thought about that, Miranda. Maybe that's an alternative, but it'd be funny for me to think like, oh, there could have been in the last year more than $1 million of projects approved that we never heard about. So anyway, that's my thought. I'd like to hear what other people think.
Marshall, then Miranda, then Zach. Miranda, then Zach.
Oh yeah. So I was just gonna say, I don't think it's necessarily a problem. I think I'm just projecting forward and thinking about our capacity as a committee. And I do wonder if there's like a happy medium where maybe it is expedited or there's some kind of like way to take a look at the projects as they come through, but maybe not use quite so much like meeting time. Yeah, I think that was like what I was thinking. 'Cause it's just like we always run out of time. You know, like there's always so many things that we could be talking about in these meetings. And I'm just intrigued about the possibilities of moving beyond like small projects that where we're just like nodding our heads, like, yes, just do it, you know.
Zach, then Marshall, then James.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I should go since Marshall was back, but yeah,
Great.
I'd be more interested in a happy medium. I noticed, with some of the presentations, although like very informative, and I really enjoyed the discussion and level of detail on kind of the smaller projects. I felt like I like after the first page, I understood kind of what was going on. So instead of like, I don't know, like a 5 or 6 page PowerPoint with accompanying documentation, maybe just like a one sheet, like this is what it is, this is why it's important, and here are kind of like briefer equity, stats of like how it would affect things.
Okay, good. Marshall, then James.
Yeah, sorry, I had to couldn't get the mute off earlier. I was just gonna say, I think this will give if we kind of approve this kind of framework, it'll give the department a way to move more quickly with projects that are already in progress, with kind of like quick, easy improvements to the kind of things we want, accessibility and safety, without having to wait, the month, say, we're just out of sync, and they can get some project in now that they think that will help. I think that would be a great use of this framework.
James?
Yeah, I don't have any real experience with this kind of stuff. Is someone able to provide me an understanding of what $100,000 of purchasing power of Prop 411 upgrades look like? Like, is that a bike lane? Is that a hawk crossing? I really don't have any idea.
Can someone, Ryan or
Yeah,
Marshall?
sorry, my dogs are barking.
Okay.
Yeah, so $100,000, I mean, depending on what you spend it on, if it were, say, enhancements to striping or delineators to enhance a bike lane, that could maybe get you a decent stretch of road with that amount of money. $100,000 is more than it would cost to install something like an RFB, which we're going to hear about from Blake in a minute. As far as things like sidewalk, $100,000 doesn't get you a whole lot. Just the cost of that has really spiked. But it could provide for like a, short fill-ins of sidewalks on a project where it's otherwise largely complete. Like maybe we have a collector project, there's a short stretch of sidewalk, a couple hundred feet. That would be an opportunity to squeeze that in. So yeah, I'm thinking kind of little stuff around the edges more than coming to you with like a fully formed project.
Thanks.
Riley?
Yeah, I'm thinking again about like the, it's like an oversight committee. So it seems a little funny to me that we don't, look at everything that's going through. I think there's a lot of stuff you can do with 100,000. And so I guess I'm leaning more toward like an expedited way to do it. Like PowerPoints that walk us through really quick, like, hey, this is what we're proposing. Maybe they can even be shorter, here's how it fits in, here's how much it costs, here's why we're doing it. And then yeah, maybe we all nod our heads, but maybe that's a good thing, So at the same time, like if people want to move forward with this proposal and the committee is in general agreement about it, I'm not gonna stand in the way, obviously. So
So this is good discussion. It's also about, the criteria. So maybe it's 75 or 50K, this is adjustable. And then the process itself, like the happy medium option, a trial period, et cetera. So be thinking about that. Ariel?
Go ahead. Yeah. No, I was just going to say like, it's hard to picture, like, is somebody going to tell us that they, took a certain amount of money for a certain number of projects anyway? So are we going to use time anyway to get updated on it? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not sure we ever held anything up. So that's another question. Did we ever hold anything up? Maybe Ryan can let us know.
Ryan or Patrick?
Yeah, I don't know that anything's been held up. I will tell you the proposal we've come to you tonight. We essentially have one meeting where, okay, hang on. One meeting where we have the opportunity to seek approval on this just because it's moving so quickly. And I will say, however you all want to do oversight, I'm happy to provide updates whenever we decide to move forward with something. If it were to be approved in such a fashion that we wouldn't need to seek explicit approval, I would be happy to send out an email to the CSCC just letting you know this is what's happening. You all can set, if you want to do a trial, you all can set a dollar cap on the trial. If you're concerned about the total dollar amount being spent without oversight, meet every month too. So I'm good with, if you all want to do this, I'm good with whatever, restrictions or oversight you all want to place on it.
Ariel, Zach, Sophia.
Yeah, I would be supportive of potentially a streamlined process. If we think about, I think it's 30 minutes allocated for, or no, it's 10 minutes allocated for this funding request that we're expecting to be a quickie, right? So we're going to maybe save 10 minutes, which makes a difference if that 10 minutes allows us to really like dig deep into a bigger project, perhaps. But yeah, maybe there is a way to streamline it because I really enjoy the presentations and I look at them beforehand and I do Google Maps to like go see the area and stuff like that. But I can do all that beforehand and I've already kind of formed an opinion beforehand. So maybe there's a way that we can just like, I don't know, can we decide if we need discussion about it or we need a presentation, or we could just like quick thumbs up, thumbs down at early on rather than doing the whole presentation if it's not deemed necessary. That was one idea. And No, and if we do go through the route, as we decide collectively that, you know, we do want to have this minimum threshold, or, you know, this automatic approval, that as long as we're, I would really want us to be kept informed, that there's some easy central way that we can see what projects have been informed and get more information about it if we want to.
Riley, Zach, Sophia, Ariel. Oh, not Ariel. Riley.
Sorry, my hand was still up from before. I just lowered it. Sorry.
I wasn't sure about that. Zach?
Yeah, I was going to say I should have said this before, but I was thinking, like, at one of our last Commission on Disability Issues meetings, we were talking to a City of Tucson DTM engineer about the placement of, you know, cross signals and different, you know, pedestrian infrastructure. And sometimes the placement, like, even though it's like a, like, the actual infrastructure is a wonderful idea, the placement of that infrastructure might leave something to be desired for some wheelchair users or other disabled people. And so having an opportunity to at least review kind of how that might be implemented and provide feedback might be helpful, even if it's still in brief form. That's all I was going to say.
Ruth.
Okay. The one reason I'm looking, the major reason I'm thinking we could do this without our approval is these projects are improvements. And I find it very hard to believe that if they come to us with a project that's under $100,000 that is an improvement on what they were going to do previously without that money, that we would vote it down. So I don't think these kind of projects require a vote from this committee. They can come to us monthly at our meetings and give us a list of projects where we added $20,000 to improve the bike lanes and inform us of those things. But I don't think, based on what we've seen so far, is that we would disagree with the use of the funding for improvements and enhancements. So that's why I'm thinking we don't need to be involved in the decision-making part of these projects, but yes, we should be informed of them. The DTM team will know about the monies at that level and if there's monies to pay for that. And personally, if there's money, I would always support an improvement. So they're not going to come to us and say, we want to spend $20,000 to take away lighting. That's not what this is about. They're projects for improvement. So that's why I don't think we need to particularly vote on those or provide any particular information, because I'm not an engineer, so I don't know how to design these things. So I'm relying on the professionals to do that. So that's what I'm thinking is these are all improvements, and I just don't see that we would vote any of them down. So that's why I don't know that we should require votes by this committee.
And just to clarify, this would be that where you're not approving the funding. So they could go forward if DTM thinks they're important. But if there was a design aspect later, they could still come to the CSCC for feedback. Is that correct, Ryan?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's only the funding approval piece of this. Sophia.
I just learned about trailer bills. So it's exciting to think about like a trailer project, which is you guys put improvement project, where that's one of the criteria items that we would include. And then because we've already had this discussion, I feel like Zach was talking about being worried about the bigger vision of the project. So that's a way to address that. I think there's still a valid concern around, you know, projects that are going out without CODI approval or without somebody with different accessibility needs, like having that approval. even though there's so many projects, like as much as we can, we should incorporate that. And so I don't know if that's Ryan, Patrick, like if there's a way to answer that concern. And also too, like Zach, when he first came on, pointed out, you know, sometimes the cross button is perfect for someone on bicycle, but not for a chair user. So I would like to, yeah, is there anything that we can address in that concern?
Brian, do you want to respond to that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I guess from my perspective, I see like funding approval and design oversight as being separate items. And so, you know, if we were to be able to initiate and fund projects, you know, without explicit CSCC approval, there would still be the same design process that we would go through. We would still be happy to seek input from you know, any agencies or individuals who would like to be involved with that. In some cases, you know, it'd be something as simple as filling in a gap in sidewalk where there's not really a lot of you know, room for, you know, design, I guess. But in some cases, yeah, there may be design decisions that relate to accessibility where that kind of input would be important, and we would want to continue to seek that kind of input.
Zach?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, I'm good with an expedited process if it's like really just about like funding that this is a good idea versus like what that, you know, what the specifics of the design look like, you know, that's a simpler yes or no type question.
So you could do something where you could have some levels and you review you for in the trial period, see what the projects are that would meet your criteria once you agree on criteria. And then you could propose this one just gets fully turned over to CSC or the city staff. This one would have a very brief, you know, review time on the agenda. This one would go through the regular process where it's probably not all yes or no, but maybe you need a little bit of time to just kind of sort through. Like we have the very next topic on the agenda is one of these types of projects. So we could move to the next topic, do that, and then come back to this. That's a very low level, you know, cost-wise, under 20 maybe, I think, right, Ryan? But at least you could, you know, be in one of those specifically. And there's only a few slides. And then decide, is that the kind of project you would be happy to just let DTM staff take care of? Any other comments right now on this? Do you want to do that? Just do that one and then come back to this? Because so far you haven't, nobody's making any other proposals for a dollar amount, for example, cost threshold. So it seems like this is what you're working with at the moment as a potential. It seems like there's mixed reviews on this. Not everybody's in support of, yeah, let's just turn it all over. Marshall. Then Sophie.
I think one thing we'd kind of, you know, thought about was maybe the project, the improvement project follows the complete street guidelines. So we allow DTM to make that determination if it falls within those guidelines, because those guidelines are, you know, pretty encompass all the things that we're concerned about.
Sophia?
I already have a thought to against that or to build on it, but I wanted to stay focused with, like, you were saying that we need to flesh out the criteria a little bit more. And I think also I would add, what does the oversight look like?
You mean, are you saying when a project does come, what do you mean by what does the oversight look like?
So I feel like you've identified that, okay, let's try to move forward, use an example, and then maybe come back to criteria. And I'm saying we could also come back to what checking in with whatever process we come up with, mm-hmm. so that there's those safeguards. We can know when to expect, how to give feedback on how it went.
Yes. Yep. Any other thoughts on the criteria over or Sophia's question? Riley.
I was just going to say that I'd be okay with a trial period and see what it actually looks like, because it's still hard for me to kind of picture like what we're addressing. Like, so.
Okay. In the interest of time, why don't we, Marshall, go ahead.
I was just going to say, right. You know, I think what started this was, I think it was maybe like two or three meetings ago. There was a project we had at the end where Patrick brought it forward, where we were going to build, they wanted to add some sidewalks to a road on, I forget which road exactly. But it was like, you know, it felt like at the end that it was kind of a like everybody was like, yeah, we definitely should be doing this. It's not a lot of money. It's not, you know, a lot of design input. They were just adding some sidewalks. And I think the idea out of it would be that we could have those kind of projects where it's minimal, you know, design inputs, you know, not a large dollar value for work that's already kind of in the pipeline, and it would allow them DTM to be able to start that more quickly.
Riley?
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. But we also, you know, we approved it. It was cool to see it, like, it's like something to celebrate. Like, that's great. And so what are we addressing? It's like, has DTM not been able to do that kind of thing? You know what I mean? Like, is CSCC an obstacle to these types of things? I guess that's where my question comes from. I'm not trying to be an obstacle myself, but so far it seems like, I guess my view was that we were able to handle these things, but maybe I'm wrong. So I don't know.
Brian, has CSC been an obstacle?
I was going to say, I certainly don't see the CSCC as an obstacle. From my perspective here, this is, if you all, essentially this is about time management, I guess, from my perspective. If you all want to change how, you know, things work for projects under $100,000 to free up time for other things on the agenda, that's your decision. If you want us to keep coming to you with small projects, that's fine too. But really I mean, it's really just all up to you. I don't have a really strong preference about it. It's really, I haven't seen CSCC be an obstacle before. You know, I suppose it's conceivable we could have a really tight turnaround on something where we got to go, go, go. And, you know, the next CSCC meeting is 4 weeks away. And that, you know, the timeline doesn't work out there. That hasn't happened yet. I don't know that it will happen. I certainly don't want to use that as sort of like a, you know, a ticking clock scenario that, you know, to try to like, you know, create urgency where there isn't any. It's really more about, you know, is this a valuable use of the CSCC's time for us to be coming with these small projects? That's all.
Good. Miranda?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to clarify, like, I definitely don't think I heard anybody saying that this was motivated by a perception that we're not doing something as quickly as we should be, or that we're holding anything up. And I hadn't thought that we had held up or caused any backlogs in project approval. Where my mind is going is the wise use of time. And we do have a very long list of agenda items. And I think we have, you know, and maybe like not all of this has been shared with the whole CSCC, but at least like in some of the conversations that Sophia and I had when I was still co-chair, like there are ideas about what we could possibly be doing with the CSCC. And so I think there is potential to move beyond this, like not in a sort of it's a problem kind of a way. Like, I think we're doing a great job, and I also enjoy seeing those projects, but I also wonder what more we could be doing in order to really meaningfully shape policy, because it's a tall task, right? And this is a really urgent situation. That's just where my mind is.
Jennifer, then Riley. Jennifer.
Okay. Yes, I did get okay. on the phone. So how about we have a standing item on the agenda where we look at the small projects that DTM has decided that they need to have done, and we just say, yeah, let's go for it. It's just a standing item. We see a DTM wants to do this, and we've had a chance to look at it beforehand. So anything under 100,000 is on that list, and we say, yeah, let's go. It's just be a standing item so we're aware of it, but it's not something we're going to spend a lot of time discussing. I'm done.
Well, and just to add to that, the co-chairs, facilitators, staff meet, you know, to plan the agenda. That's also an opportunity to review that list and to take a look at this. Actually seems like it'll need more time and that there's going to be a lot of interest as opposed to these other ones. Riley.
I was just going to say, I think Miranda finally answered my question, and maybe I didn't frame it very well, but I think, you know, this is really about making time for other things and other things that I might not be aware of, things that I might see as really important and great. So again, I think I would go back to like doing a trial period so that we can see how it goes without, you know, sort of having to formally approve projects under 100,000. I wouldn't call them smaller projects anyway. It's a lot of money still. But and then also see what space does that provide for other things, and how are we using that time differently? And that could really shed a lot of light on what this is all about in the end for me.
So
I would propose kind of moving forward with this. I think Ruth brought it up first, and then just putting a trial period on it. And then
The trial period isn't clarified right at this point, because exactly. There's a trial period where it means anything under 100K that complete streets guidelines, you know, improvement projects, whatever, those are just not coming to you at all. And then you're going to, in 6 months or when you hit a threshold amount of money of those projects, like 500K, then you're going to review what happened. That would be trial period option A. Another version of the trial period is more like what Jennifer was saying. You're going to see these are the projects, and you're going to sort through, does it make sense that we just would approve those? Like, not approve those, but just fast track them. And, you know, period needs to be clarified. Oh, go ahead, Riley.
Yeah, no, it sounded to me generally that we'd always know, you know, each month we get an update on what they did, you know, what DTM did. So that was my understanding of it, but.
Okay. Okay. I think that, I'm not sure that we're at a point where we have exact clarity on this. Maybe we can try to clean this up a little bit with this trial period approach and these kinds of criteria. And then next month, we can come to you with these that they can be informed. You can get a handle on a little bit more of what are the kinds of projects that fit in this, like the one that we're about to look at and others. And then figure out how you want to handle it. To kind of, we would take a little bit more time if we're going to find wordsmith the exact decision at this moment. Riley, did you have another thing to say? Or raise your hand just a little.
Sorry. It doesn't show that it's up on the phone, so.
I know, it's hard. But you're outside, which is great. Well, how about if we go to the next topic, which is one of these small, relatively small projects. And then Ryan, do you agree with that?
I just wanted to mention one. Ben okay. Garcia put a comment, a suggestion in the chat that I just want to make sure everyone is aware of. And then I, and then just the other thing is I want to be respective of Blake's time and see if we can do his presentation on crossing treatments before we dive into Tucson Boulevard and potentially back into
Yeah, for sure.
this item.
And then you can put your minds back into the small projects. Okay, go ahead, Blake.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right, Zoom is my enemy. All right, let's try and share screen now, see if this part works. All right, can you see that?
Success.
All right, here we go. All right, I'm going to tell you everything you didn't want to know or wanted to know about crosswalks. I know we have limited time, so I'm going to move fast, but I think the background information is important. Don't know who had a chance to look at this before. Let me get my mouse over here. So types and legality. Most of us probably know every street intersection is a legal crosswalk by state law, city code. Pedestrians have the right of way. It's actually not legal to cross a street between two traffic signals. You can, but you have to yield the right of way to vehicles. Or actually, no, sorry. It's not legal to cross with the red arrows. When there's a street between two traffic signals, it's legal. But it doesn't really do you any good if you're struck, obviously. Those are just the legalities of it. There's three types of crosswalks: unmarked, which would be the green ones in here, which there's no actual paint down. There's marked uncontrolled, which is kind of like this one here, where there's no stop signs or anything like that controlling it. And then there's mark controlled, which would be a signal or a hawk or something like that. So types of crossings, we typically use the transverse crossings at signalized intersections, and then we use high visibility everywhere else. People ask, why don't we use high visibility everywhere? I've been in Tucson for many municipalities do use these everywhere. It's three times the amount of material. So for one reason or another, it just never was never adopted that way. Legal state law. Each state has to choose whether they're a yield to pedestrian state or a stop for pedestrian state. Unfortunately, we're a yield to pedestrian state, which means you don't actually have to stop your vehicle. You could be rolling forward and still be yielding, which I'm not a fan of because it's unclear who has the right of way. But we'd have to go to Phoenix to get that fixed. So when to mark, obviously we mark all traffic signals. All the yellow ones you see out there are school crossings, and they require a contract with the school and a crossing guard. We can't mark just because it's a school. We can't just mark yellow. I'm going to skip down. We typically don't mark on two-lane, low-volume roadways like residential streets and things like that, just because we would be marking everywhere. And then the meat of kind of the presentation is what's our standard and what's the FHWA, Federal Highway guidance on marking. So when to mark or not. So this is Tankaverde. It's 120 feet. There's six lanes of traffic. It's going 45 miles an hour. I would not mark this. This is sort of a legacy marking. Back in the day, they really didn't have any guidance. If someone asked, can I have a crosswalk? There was some kind of PED generator in the area, they would just mark it. And you can see here that there's a sort of a refuge there, but really, really not something we would do. And why? So there was this landmark study that came out. It was finally published in 2005, and it actually found that the crash rate at marked crosswalks was higher than unmarked. And this was confirmed. And under certain traffic conditions, no median, 15,000 cars, three lanes. Just for reference, almost every street in Tucson that has more than two lanes in each direction is more than 20,000 vehicles per day. So we're talking about just about every street, arterial and collector. And we don't know why this is the case, but it was believed that people had some sense that they were in a crosswalk and cars were going to stop for them, and that wasn't the case. Maybe they weren't. You know, I'm blaming pedestrians, not here to do that, but maybe they thought that the vehicles were going to stop and they didn't. So out of all that research came this guidelines from FHWA. And I know this is a lot, but I'm not going to bore you with this, but we're going to talk about it a little more. But basically what you see here is there's roadway configurations from two lanes to four or more lanes on this column. And then there's three buckets of vehicle volume. So 9,000, 9 to 15, 15 plus. And then there's three buckets of speed 30, 35, 40. And then there's all these countermeasures that are identified in each box for that category. So you just go to your street, your volume, your speed, and you look in here and it tells you what you should consider. The range of mitigation goes from basic marking of a crosswalk number one to a pedestrian hybrid beacon, which is the official name for a hawk. And that's the most extreme or most controlling device. And then you can see we're going to talk about rectangular rapid flashing beacon, and that's up here too. So I just wanted to throw out some of the stuff that kind of ties into the things that you were talking about before about funding sort of like smaller projects. We talked about high visibility crosswalks, you know, $3,000, that's one leg. It's expensive just because we use high quality material that lasts. I'm sure many of you are familiar with lots of stuff, but raised crosswalks, yield to here, pedestrian signs with shark tooth yield markings, in-street pedestrian signs, curb extensions to shorten the crossing distance, a pedestrian refuge so we can, two-stage crossing so you can get to one side. You're only dealing with one direction of traffic at a time and then you can cross the other. And then I'm gonna skip over pedestrian hybrid beacon and talk about these two a little more detail, but just for numbers, we're looking at, it's just really insane what prices are now, but $350,000 for a hawk, that would include design. That would probably be on the high end. A RRFB is on the low side. I mean, 25,000, it's magnitude of more than 10 to 1. And then I want to talk about just quickly flashing signs and beacons. And we get a lot of requests for these type of things. The thing is that there's no studies that show or prove that these do anything at all. So we're kind of reluctant to use them widespread just because the more flashing things we throw out there, it kind of fades into the background and how many is too many. We do place them on case-by-case basis. So pedestrian hybrid beacon, Hawk, if you didn't know, this was developed here in Tucson. We were the first agency that got it in the manual on uniform traffic control. One of my predecessors, Dr. Nassie, developed it here and got it approved by FHWA. So I think we all know what this is. You push the button, it has a solid red, and then it goes wig-wag after a certain clearance interval. And then vehicles can proceed on their half after the crosswalk is cleared. We have high compliance by both drivers and pedestrians. It's understood here in Tucson. They've been around for many years. It's easy for police to enforce should they choose to do so because everyone knows red means stop. It's an excellent safety benefit to pedestrians, have very few incidents of pedestrians being struck when they do activate the device. Like I mentioned, it's costly to construct and it's somewhat time consuming to design. There's been some study on compliance rates right here in Tucson. They found a 96% compliance rate by drivers and a 92% compliance rate by pedestrians. Now, I know I hear anecdotally every day in my job about people don't stop for me, people don't stop. I think that, you know, when you're looking at a large number of vehicles, a large number of crossings, the percentages are high, but we do see those outliers. So rectangular rapid flashing beacon. So this is just a warning device. It's basically a flashing sign, like I mentioned before. It doesn't require vehicles to come to a complete stop. It's difficult to enforce non-compliance. There's a wide variation in compliance by drivers, and I'll show that in a second. And then sometimes it's understood by pedestrians. We train people so well. We have over 140 hawks. We'll have over 200 in the next 5 years. We've trained people, push the button, vehicles stop. As a traffic engineer, I have concerns about this device and whether it's understood by both drivers and pedestrians. Like I said here, pedestrians may assume that vehicles will stop after the pushing the button, but they don't. And I'll show that in a second. We're looking for, with the new standards, is passive detection. So if you get near the button, it would just turn on. So we don't have to rely on people pushing the button. One problem with it that's a concern of mine is bicycles are considered vehicles in Arizona. So if a bicycle crosses this in front of a vehicle and there's a crash, who's at fault? Really, it's up to the courts to decide because it's two vehicles. Obviously, it's less expensive than a pedestrian hybrid beacon slash hawk. Compliance with RFB, it's all over the map. It varies greatly by speed limit, number of lanes, crossing distance, and time of day. So they have these yielding rates by vehicles from 80% down to 14. You really can't use these numbers unless you know what the configuration is, all these components, speed, number of lanes, crossing distance, and so forth. We have two RFBs in Tucson. We have one on Doby near Sunnyside High School, and we have one on Congress, on Bonita, just west of the interchange. We did a study there. We found that pedestrians activated it 74% at daytime, 66% at night, and the yielding rate was not great. At night it was higher, probably because the lights were on and they could see them better, but in the 50% yielding category. So back to pedestrian hybrid beacons. So when we're looking at crossing, the bottom line is it's case by case. But when you look at the chart here, anything over 40 miles an hour is going to be a pedestrian hybrid beacon. So that's these two columns here. And then when you start getting the higher speeds, really anything over two lanes is going to be a hawk. So then you look at these boxes outside. So they also recommend these outside of those categories. We're kind of locked in on the black ones. It's kind of like highly recommended. The problem is the lawyers got a hold of this chart. And so anytime we don't follow the chart or deviate from it, we're putting ourselves at risk for liability. And I've been in court for this. The real key for me on these devices is the multiple threat, because if you put an RRB here across four lanes and one car stops, RB doesn't really know why or what's going on. So we're really putting people, both the driver and the pedestrian, in a bad situation. With the hawk, you know, I see high compliance when I'm driving. So the first vehicle does stop, the second vehicle does stop. And that's tried and true in the crash statistics. Then we go to RRP. So really, me and my staff are really only comfortable putting them on 30 miles an hour, up to three lanes with the median. That's kind of where we're at. I could see some instances where it could be on four lanes with a lower speed. It just really depends on context and really low traffic volume. The other thing that I want to mention is, like, I'm kind of putting myself out here, but we did have one at Glen and Treat, and that's three lanes. And I, you know, I think that a hawk there might be a little overkill in some sense. An RFB could work there, but after it was installed, people love it. I get, you know, when it malfunctioned once, and it was just like everyone just came out of the woodwork letting us know how much they appreciate that device. So it's really tough for me to be ethical, to put myself when I'm in the haves and the have-nots. So one crossing treatment, which with that context gets it, and one doesn't. So I really, you know, safety is paramount. And so I'm not dismissing the RFB, but it just needs to be the right context. And then I just want to let you guys know that we do take marked crosswalk requests. And so we evaluate them for the chart. Like I mentioned, the school crossings require a contract. That's kind of a separate thing. We follow the guidance, and we do studies, and we're very liberal on this. But our guidelines say 20 crosses in 1 hour before we're gonna, or less if there's disabled, and then if it's transit nearby. One thing we don't do is that we have to have compliant ADA curb ramps. I don't want to mark a crosswalk and just create an island for those people. And leave them out of transportation. So we do have to do the curb ramps. Unfortunately, I don't have funding in my budget for that. So sometimes, or many times, it's a no just because of that. So I didn't have a questions a slide, but that's what I got for you. I'm happy to take as many questions as you like.
Perfect. 15 minutes. Okay, Sophia.
Well, I just want to say no questions yet. Actually, no, I totally lied. I have like 5 questions. I really love this. And I feel like this capacity building and education is so important, just as much as is the project approvals. So I did want to, man, I have so many questions. I did want to go back to the types and legality. I just didn't hear you when you were talking about, I think I put my question in the chat. I just didn't understand like what was legal, what was not legal. You were making
okay, a distinction.
Yeah.
Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
So yeah, so basically any intersection, every intersection in the city is a legal crosswalk. Some of them are marked, some of them are not. Most of them are not marked, right? You know, if you live on a residential street right out in front of your house, there's a intersection or, you know, four-way intersection, that's legal crosswalk. But you have the right to cross whenever, at both marked and unmarked, and vehicles are, by law, should yield to you. The law in Tucson, which is a little odd, is it says that it's not legal for pedestrians to cross mid-block between two traffic signals. And that's pretty uncommon, because if you think about traffic signal spacing is like a quarter mile, there's probably likely a street, you know, another side street between those two streets. So that's like this middle one. So legally you could cross there, but you have to yield to vehicles. You can't obviously just run out in the road or put your hand up and expect vehicles to stop. The roles are reversed in that case. I highly discourage people from crossing mid-block, because when you're driving, just contextually, subconsciously in your mind, when you come to an intersection, that there might be pedestrian activity. And that's why we're so careful on these, because, I mean, while there are driveways here, it's just not something a motorist expects at 45 miles an hour. They're just not going to detect it, especially that it's coming two ways. There's traffic. They're blocked by lanes, like I mentioned before. So that's why these guidelines are so important.
So to clarify the law about you can't cross between two intersections, but then a driveway or a road almost negates, because the second picture looks like, oh, it's between two intersections, but then there's a roadway or a driveway.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe explain that well. So almost every situation in Tucson is going to be like this. So you can, because there's a side street and there's not a signal here, so you can cross between. But if there was a signal here, you can't. I know it's a little confusing, but in the end, you shouldn't be crossing mid-block.
Right.
For your own safety.
But this is more about the legality. And then my other two questions are about how the compliance rate was derived. And then the second one was, if the chart that you have for the crossings, if that accounts for speeding that happens in those areas that are marked 30, 35, et cetera. But first question
I'll take the last one first. Okay. So that's the other thing. I said posted speed. So we know the posted speed is not what people drive. That's why I'm so uncomfortable about putting an RFB even on 30, because I know they're going 40. So I'm not even touching 40. I mean, I'm not even going there, because that's 50. One thing we do have going for us is most of our streets are straight and we have lots of sight distance, but that doesn't really, you know, help anything. The second question on the compliance study, I can't speak to, I could provide this report. I haven't read it in a while, but they did observations. And counting all these so they counted how many times the button was pushed, the number of drivers not yielding. So actually like someone standing there watching, they probably used a camera. For this study,
like an automatic camera, because I'm curious if it was done at night or during the day.
Oh, I could get back to you on that. I don't know this one. This, the our B study was 48 hours of video day and night, because we have night observations. And we actually partnered with the University of Arizona and had poor grad students watch 48 hours of video and write down, tabulate everyone's behavior. So that's how that one was done.
I love that. And so then a lot of what is informing your personal take is the research aspect that, and I think some of them are in the slides, and then the other is the anecdote, what you hear from people when they're saying there's a problem.
I have to go on data. I can't go on conjecture or anecdotal, but we get constant complaints. People don't stop. I don't observe that as much as I hear it, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think it was more so like the hot crossing comment when.
Oh yeah. So the RFB, I don't think that, I'm fearful that most people don't even know what it is or how to use it based on these numbers. I mean, my personal observations in the city, I still see the high compliance by both drivers and pedestrians at Hawks, but I do hear that's not the case. But I don't have any data to support that one way or another except this study.
So how about if we get Jennifer's question? Do you still have a question?
Well, I put my hand down, but but I do want to make a comment about the Glen and Treat. Even though it's only three lanes, that stretch, and this is anecdotal because I live in the area. That stretch actually is a place where people will speed up because Glen has got all those stop signs and stop lights. But then there was this big stretch between Country Club and Tucson Boulevard where people would speed down the street because they were trying to make up for all the time stopping at the stop sign. So that has been a really great addition to the neighborhood. And we used to have that flashing pedestrian sign, and that got moved over to Tucson Boulevard and Copper. So that's just something that happened. I just wanted to say that, but I'm going to let that go. I'm done.
Yeah, that comment, I know people love it. I would love, if I lived there, I'd love it. It's right by a park. The context fits. It's just, to me, it's just a little more.
Arielle, then Marshall.
I was curious, what is it about the hot crossings that makes them so much more expensive than any of the other solutions, like 10 times more than the next one down on the list?
Yeah, when I came to Tucson 6 years ago, we were looking at $200,000 for a hop. I think the pandemic had a lot to do with it. Steel prices, it's really just the price of the materials, and the contractors are super busy right now so they can name their price type of thing. I don't know where the end is in sight, but there's the biggest cost is probably the materials and just getting power to a location. I don't want to say bad numbers here, but you're looking at least like 20,000 just to get power there. So we've looked at, the one at Glen and Treat is a solar one and it was cheaper, but we're just not happy with it. It's malfunctioned a few times and I don't support that technology. It's just the market we're in right now.
So is it comparable to how much it would cost to add just like a regular signaled intersection?
Yeah.
Or is so we something had, about the Hawk that's usually more expensive?
Yeah. We're reconstructing a signal right now, it's $800,000.
So that's really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's not an anomaly.
Marshall, then Zach.
Yeah, I was just asking a quick question. You had the example of the striped markings across Tanque Verde as being something we wouldn't do now. And I drive through Speedway or Broadway and Swan every day. So there used to be a marked crossing that was east of that intersection just a little bit, and it was covered in oil or something. It was kind of like it was kind of erased, but not fully. So you just have some of the rectangular signs now, indicating that it's a pedestrian where pedestrians could cross. Do you think that's ultimately more safer? Is that what you were trying to say?
Well, I don't want to say safer. I'm just, all I can say is the data showed. I mean, they studied, I think, like 2,000 crosswalks and then 2,000 companion sites, and you know the crash rate was 5 times higher. So we have a policy internally where if we run across this one in Tankaverde again and we're going to pave, we're going to take it out. Okay. My team last year, we instinctively identified what we believe are all of these, not all are 6 lanes, but they're that. And we're trying to cross-reference those to see where we can get grants for Hawks. And we do get about 10 a year from the federal government. Anyways, we're trying to address them. And if we have to address them by grinding off the markings or whatever it may be, we're working towards that, because I just don't want this is a kind of a liability for us.
Yeah. You know, like the one on Swan, I think it looks like it's just kind of covered in black paint, so it's still, you can still see it, but it's not really there. Yeah. It's very confusing.
Yeah. I don't want to hear that, but yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, thanks.
Zach.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. One is, like, I mean, this is somewhat tangential to, like, crosswalks in general, but, like, is there, a standard for, like, 3 lanes of traffic, the speed limit for 3 lanes of traffic versus 2 lanes versus... markings, just so, like, you know, if we're thinking above 40 miles per hour for, like, 4 lanes of traffic or 4+, does that have to go above 40 miles per hour in general? Or could it go slower? Because that, like, obviously, if we're not able to put in Hawks, like, everywhere we want, because they are exorbitantly expensive at the moment, are there ways that we can think of increasing pedestrian safety that besides just crosswalks, I guess? And then I have one other question, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the question. I mean, it kind of is what it is, and I really want to emphasize that we don't just follow this chart. You know, we look at every location case by case, and we have a lot of experienced people at the city, and this study's been out since, like I said, 2005. I remember when it came out. It was a shocker, I guess what I'll say, and I don't know if I'm answering your questions, but I don't look at posted speed so much as operating speed. Like, what are vehicles actually going? I mean, I don't really feel like people follow the speed limit, whatever. You can put up whatever sign you want out there, but it's really context how people drive, and that's what we're looking at. And we're just, like, I just don't want to put people at risk. And I know that it's long, you know, we just need to fill in the gaps. It's just going to take time, but I think we're going to get there. We're going to get, I had the first time I, after the Broadway project completed, I stopped for 2 Hawks in a row for the first time. And I was like, wow. And I was like, kind of going off on a tangent here, but at first I was like frustrated. I was like, that's pretty cool. You know, we did something where there's enough crossing opportunities on that section now. So we're just going to have to fill in the gaps, and it's just moving forward.
Right. Like, I understand. I guess I was just more asking if decreasing the speed limit, even on, like, roads, with a lot of lanes would have a noticeable effect in terms of, you know, pedestrian safety. But if, you know, if it's more about operational speed and like how traffic is actually flowing versus posted speed, like I understand that. My other question is a little bit more easy to answer with the marked crosswalk requests. When you said like it could be 15 people crossing if there were elders, disabled, youth, do you mean like 50, like if there's one elderly person, then there just needs to be 15 people in general? Or do you mean that there needs to be 15 elders, disabled, and youth within that time frame? For
So I want to just reemphasize that this is an internal policy that was developed before I got there. So we're very liberal on it. The amount of time it goes to count this is not worth my time. It's kind of no brainer. If it makes sense. If I can get the right mitigation, you know, those 1 through 9 that I mentioned, and that fifth is, we're going to do it. The biggest barrier for me is the curb ramps. It just seems like I run into problems with that. We're trying to ask our partners in the street maintenance division to help us that way. Because like, I mean, I'm not lying. One curb ramp can cost $5,000. It's ridiculous. So we're just, I'm trying to serve the public, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I understand that. I was just trying to understand the, like, kind of the requirements and
There's some guidance somewhere that it came from where you should have 20 crosses in an hour to warn it. Just because we can't mark every single one, this is kind of like a way to kind of like put that in a box. But then they were kind of loosening the restriction if there was elderly. So again, I'm very liberal on it, but I would say if there's one elderly person in the hour, then that's 15. That helps.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Are you?
Mm-hmm. I remember a couple meetings back, there was discussion about what kind of light was going to go in at an intersection. I feel like maybe it was the Silverbell Road. So I'm curious about, you know, this guidance seems, you know, pretty clear what the best practice is. So are decisions made in the design stage based on what the best practice is, or budget, or a combination thereof? Like, you know, if a hop crossing is the safest solution, is the budget request for a hop crossing, or is a cheaper solution considered for budgetary purposes?
So I would, you know, ultimately, sometimes maybe I'm not the final decider, but I put my professional opinion forth. I haven't seen deviations from that as the risk of safety by anyone above me. I know that there was discussions on Bike Boulevard projects in particular, whether that program could fund all the crossings that we would recommend, but I haven't seen any ill effects from that discussion but in my chair, I can do what I can do. I can just give the best information based on my experience and give that to leadership, and that's what I do.
So I think in the interest of time, we need to move on to our last two topics, but this is really informative, and I'm wondering if you might just put your email address in the chat, and if anybody has any more specific follow-up questions, they can contact you directly.
Yeah, that would be great. We have our new 311 system, and I like to advertise that. 311s, everything, potholes, this left turn arrows too short. I need my street sweeped. I'm trying to put this in here. 311 is the way to go. It goes to us. It gets tracked like the FedEx number. You get an email confirmation, and you get an email back So 311 is the best way to go.
Great. Okay. So thanks for that. We are going to move to the 411 funding request, Tucson Boulevard buffered bike lanes. This is an example of a low cost, relatively speaking, smallish project. So you get the sense of the kinds of projects on the lower end that are being, where you were discussing. You are still trying to get to decision on this. And I believe this is this Ryan? Are yes. you giving the presentation? Okay, go for it.
Thank you. All right, I will try to make this brief, but we are looking for funding. We're looking for funding to provide enhanced bike lanes on Tucson Boulevard from Broadway to 22nd Street in concert with a repaving project that is starting right about now, actually. The press release just went out about it today. So what we're proposing is to restripe the road to narrow the vehicle lanes and add buffered bike lanes. Currently, there are 5-foot bike lanes on Tucson Boulevard between Broadway and 22nd Street. The width of the road varies. There are kind of two major sections. One is 44 feet and one is 48 feet. Both of them present an opportunity to provide buffered bike lanes following our street design guide. Guidance on lane widths and prioritization. The reason that we're asking for this funding is that under the collector program, the scope includes replacing the existing pavement and striping, but additional striping or any other treatments would require additional funding. And the cost of that additional striping, and that really just is the extent of that is really just the added lines required for the buffers and some additional markings like the bike lane symbols and some green pavement would be about $15,000. Project goals that this would meet, the goals to prove safety for all users by providing a better bike facility, provide that low stress bike facility, and to leverage repaving work as we're trying to do with the collector program projects. As far as equity goes, this project is within or is adjacent to the areas that fall into the highest equity need category. As far as connectivity, there are several bike facilities that either existing or planned that either intersect or come very close to Tucson Boulevard and could be part of trips that would include Tucson Boulevard. So you can see there's the Arroyo Chico Greenway, part of which is completed, more of which is going to construction soon, and then some other segments that are still yet to be designed. There's the Andrew Street Bike Boulevard, which is funded Prop 407 project. Got the Treat Bike Boulevard, passes very close here, and we've got 18th Eastland Bike Boulevard, which is a potential future improvement. And I'm realizing now that I did not update the text on this. On this slide, but I walked you all through it, so hopefully that's good. Sorry about that.
Went all the way to Menlo Park.
So, sorry about that. Any questions?
Sophia?
I'm supportive of approving the funding and revisiting the conversation that we started.
So are there any, let's take a few minutes for discussion. Are there any questions or concerns? Jennifer.
Okay. I guess it's more like a comment. I got the press release too, because I get those. And it's the press release says 6th Street to 22nd Street, but it's only to Broadway that the bike lane is going to happen. And that's probably because the 6th to Broadway is going to be too expensive, right? To do improve the bike lanes. Just curious.
Yeah. So the answer to that really is, there's a kind of twofold. The short version is that right now, the repaving project is moving because, we are trying to redo it before the 22nd Street Bridge construction happens, and we want to get this road fixed up for that to be one of the detour routes. And so right now, really, the only thing we can affect is striping. But then looking at north of Broadway from Broadway to, I think, about 8th Street, the road is particularly narrow there. It's not wide enough to maintain a three-lane configuration. That's the one lane in each direction with a center turn lane, plus bike lanes. It's as narrow as, I think, 36 feet in that section. Potentially we could look at in the future either widening the pavement there, although the right-of-way is tight in the area, so that could potentially come with very high expense and real estate takings. Another alternative could be to remove the center turn lane. That may not be advisable just due to the traffic volume on the road. Three-lane roads, I mean, roads with center turn lanes versus roads that don't, but are otherwise similar. Center turn lanes do provide a safety benefit. That safety benefit is lessened and can be mitigated by other factors, particularly on lower volume streets. So that's the short and long version, essentially, essentially we don't have any opportunity to affect any change north of Broadway in that way at this time.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? Okay, so with our consensus process, this would be that you would be with a thumbs up supporting that this goes forward as, oh goodness, why don't you frame the decision, Ryan? You would be approving the Tucson Boulevard buffered bike lanes project.
So we're requesting approval to fund with Prop 411 safety funding from bikeways category to allow us to provide enhanced bike lanes on Tucson Boulevard.
Okay. Now, all members, you can raise your hand if you aren't going to be able to approve this. That would mean, again, we have consensus levels 4, agree with without reservations is a 1, agree with reservations 2, stand aside is 3. All of those, it would move forward. Now, and level 4 is do not agree, which would be the same as a no vote. So just hold your fingers up, camera on. We've got 1s, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And Jennifer's got your camera on. Okay, so you have approved this by consensus, and we'll have the co-chairs move to approve, so we are recording it in that format as well. Sophia.
I move to approve the funding for the stretch along Tucson Boulevard with restriping and buffered bike lanes.
And Colleen's got it typed out accurately.
Great. Marshall.
I second.
Okay, good job. All right, so returning to the other discussion, this would be an example. This is 15,000. It's not 99,000. So do you have any comments about this in light of this as a sample project that would potentially be in the give the city the ability to just make these funding decisions? We're probably not going to fully approve this tonight because there's still a couple more items on the agenda. But if there's comments about it right now before we move to the next topic. Sophia.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's a survey that we put out to kind of get a sense for consensus. Do we want to make the projects that we streamline approval 100, higher, lower, and then doing that with the other criteria just to get a sense so that we can like have something way more specific that we can agree on.
Good idea. Riley?
Um, I was just going to say, like, it was nice to hear about it. It was nice to get a walk through it. It took us about 6 minutes from presentation start by my count to like go through it and approve it. I can see if there were like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those, you know, in a meeting, it would add up. But I'm just sharing that as an observation.
Sounds good. All right, so we'll follow up on this. We'll discuss as a group, as our facilitator, co-chairs, staff, and we can send out a survey like Sophia is suggesting, and then we'll come back to this next meeting. How does that sound? Sophia, do you want to say something else?
Yeah, and just to add, like, anyone can always email your quick thoughts right now. You don't have to wait around for a survey. That way it's emailed somewhere and then it can show up at a co-chair meeting or can inform something like a survey. Everyone's very friendly. Patrick, Tawny, Colleen.
And do you
Now, Ryan. Yeah, go ahead.
And do you all feel like you also would benefit from some additional examples of the kinds of projects like the one we just looked at that would be in these different thresholds of funding, et cetera? Or not? James?
Yeah, I would certainly benefit from more examples. My sample size is 1 at the moment, so it's hard to make a real informed decision. But thank you.
So, Brian, can you put together some examples within these kind of maybe the different dollar amounts or other kind of categories so that people can at least have some tangible project types to consider?
Yeah, I can certainly do that. Is that something that you'd want me to email out before the next meeting or be prepared to discuss at a future meeting?
Well, I think people would always say, if you're willing to email it in advance, it's better.
Oh, sure. But yeah, I mean, I guess I meant, is this, do we want this to be separate, like separate from like the meeting materials, or would this be in preparation for the next meeting?
What do you all think? It doesn't matter if you emailed in a separate message. Did you send these out a week in advance? How far? A few days.
The materials went out a little later than usual this time around. But yeah, I think, you know, we had kind of a shorter process of putting together the agenda and everything this time. But yeah, usually I'd try to get them out, you know, up to a week.
In Ryan's defense, we didn't actually have our co-chair's agenda meeting until much later this time. So you had less time to develop materials.
So how about as soon as they're ready? And definitely with the other materials.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got a lot to prepare, usually. Okay, let's just move on to the CSCC hub to make sure we get through that as well, if you don't mind. So let's start with Independent Oversight Accountability Commission. Jim, are you still on? Yeah, there you are. Jim DeGroot, are you there?
I am. Sorry, I'm just looking for that mute button.
Okay.
So found it. The IOAC met on, I believe, the 22nd of June. I'm sorry, of April. I apologize. Met the 22nd of April. Was basically an overview meeting. There was no action item. It was mostly updates on projects and the provision of status on where we were with the delivery of projects. We did at that point in time, speak to the fact that we did get the approval to go forward with the Tucson Boulevard project, and that project, by the way, is now under construction. So started this week, and so that's pretty much the. The report I have this afternoon or this evening.
Any questions for Jim? Okay, Park Tucson, Jill.
Hi there. Kind of the same, went over the you know, budget. The administrator is going out to neighborhoods to discuss with all the neighborhoods that participate in the, what's it called, the RF, the reserved parking program, like the money goes back into the neighborhoods, and that's kind of getting reestablished. And Park Tucson is still trying to staff up its enforcement. And that's kind of it. Does anybody have anything they'd want me to take back to the Park Tucson Commission?
My question would be, what's the big picture vision of Park Tucson? That would be great to know.
I will ask it.
Yeah.
That would be great to know. I mean, I think, you know, the managing the parking, it kind of in the downtown area. I mean, beyond that, you know, I'm not even really clear if the money that Park Tucson makes, I mean, I know it stays within Park Tucson, but I don't know if some of it goes into the general fund, you know? So maybe I'll ask that too.
Great.
Anything else? All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jill. Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, Riley.
I was not able to go to the last meeting, so I don't have any updates, unfortunately, to the group today.
Anyone else here go to the last meeting?
Monica and Davita, I see, are here. I don't know if you have anything you can add. I don't know if there's anything important. I haven't seen minutes yet, so.
I'm sorry, I wasn't at the meeting.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Riley. Is Shamara no still worries. Online?
Shamara.
Yes. Shamara was present at the meeting. She's our new transit planner for SunTran.
Great. Thanks for coming, Shamara. Do you have anything to share?
I do not, but thanks for having me.
No, okay. About the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee meeting that you went to. Can you tell them what happened?
I currently do not have my notes on me right now, but can I update you in the next meeting?
Well, yeah, that'll be Riley is the person who updates. So, but if you guys can coordinate, or if Riley isn't able to go, then you can do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Bicycle Advisory Committee, James.
Yes. Last Wednesday was the final meeting of the current set of elected officers. So we elected new officers. As a first item to share. The second item is we are in the process of trying to engage Pima County Transportation about specifically the Dodge Boulevard crossing where it connects to the loop on the north side. This came from both a public comment and some of the members where it's basically an unsafe intersection due to both quality of pavement and actually signage. It's unclear, kind of both pedestrian and car stop, and then they both try to go at the same time. So we're looking for a way to improve that intersection specifically. Finally, and I'm not gonna get the acronyms right, something to do with the Pima County flood. There's long story short, there is a committee being formed that has to do solely with the loop, and the loop matters. NRPR is what I have in my notes. I don't know what that stands for, but the BAC was invited to have a liaison to that committee, and so we elected someone to chair that position. And again, that's just going to be dealing with loop related materials only. Apparently this is something that was sort of a long time coming, and the county was reluctant but has agreed. So that's all the updates I have about the last meeting.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments for James? All right, last one, Commission on Disability Issues, Zach.
Yes, hello. Last meeting, which happened last week, we spoke with representatives from SunTran regarding different busing issues that affect people with disabilities, such and probably non-disabled folks as well, such as inconsistent tones or announcements of where the where buses are or when they've stopped. This can affect people with less who are blind or who have vision disabilities, and also like secure. Proper securement of mobility devices through the quantum system that the buses use, and the different options for that use. They have some additional signage, and they've done additional training with drivers after an incident where a bus user with a disability become unsecured during a ride, which puts them in danger. So I'm happy to take any questions or concerns back to the commission, though.
Any questions or comments? Thank you, Zach. Okay, wrap up topics. DTM staff and project updates. Ryan, Patrick, Jim. Not sure who's going to share.
I can go first. So I can tell you that our consultant has provided us with cost estimates for the collector program. There will need to be some decisions made about how it's going to be spent. It came in higher than the amount of money that we're going to have available. And we can send those out. We're still going over those, but we can send those out in a little bit before the next CSCC meeting. But this could be an opportunity where you may want to reconvene the project development subcommittee. That's something that that we'd like, you know, we would like to take advantage of that and discuss the various collector projects and kind of try to get a handle on that prior to the next CSCC meeting if possible. But if not, we can work on whatever timeline.
Okay, so on that, with that project, do you remember you all, if you were on that subcommittee? And I think Colleen probably has the list, so we can locate that. But regardless of that, if you can raise your hand, if you would be interested in being part of that subcommittee, these aren't standing committees. These are temporary committees to just, you know, have one, two, three meetings to address. Although you could decide that you want it to be a permanent standing committee. And so if you want to just raise your hand so we can see that there's enough of you with interest to reconvene. Yeah. Or if you have questions for Ryan about what it covers.
I guess I'd want to know just a little bit more about what the committee would do.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the idea is we would look at the cost estimates. We'd look at, you know, the scopes and the costs for all of them. So we looked at all of the collector streets. Well, not all of them, but we looked at the major ones where there's opportunities with Move Tucson projects, essentially. And so, you know, we need to prioritize improvements. We need to figure out which improvements I guess we want to put at the top of the list, because we're not going to be able to afford everything. So essentially we need to prioritize those improvements and figure out a framework for, you know, what it is that we most want to fund and down the list.
And Ryan, if I may.
Please.
Yeah, so this is the group that we had last time when we came up with the one-year program. We're trying to get put together a five-year overarching plan. So we worked closely with the subcommittee to really go project by project, which we never really had enough time within the full committees because of how full these agendas can often be. So it gives us an opportunity to really dive in and come back to the full committee with a recommendation. So if you want to roll up your sleeves and kind of get to that level of decision-making about where we spend the money, we're looking at about having $15 to $20 million available, for example, for sidewalk projects. The cost estimates we got back puts that closer to about $50 million. So we're going to have to make decisions of how do we, what do we want to spend that money on? What $20 million do we want to invest in Tucson? And that group would really be engaged with that at a higher level.
And then they would bring back the recommendations to the full CSCC for review and decision first, and they wouldn't make the decision in their subcommittee.
Correct. Everything would have to go back to the full body.
So can you raise your hand, unless there's any other questions, raise your hand if you're interested in being part of that subcommittee. We've got Zach, Miranda, Ariel. Anyone else? I'm looking carefully. Sophia? Okay. If you think later, like, oh my gosh, I should have volunteered for that subcommittee, just email Ryan.
Tani, I just want to check. I've got it in the notes. Zach, Miranda, Ariel, Sophia. Did I miss anyone?
No.
Okay.
All right. Okay. We are 1 minute from the end. We can't really review the agenda items list right now unless there are any specific suggestions for the next few months' agendas that are burning on your mind. Okay. And then once again, this wonderful idea of the personal complete streets experiential opportunity, which is the take a ride on your public transit and consider these things. They're in the agenda. And we're not going to have time for that, but how about we roll it over one more time? Raise your hand if you actually did the experience and you were ready to share about it. Miranda, Sophia, and Jill. Okay, I would say that let's make sure in June we don't bump this. Let's make sure we actually do this topic. All right. And on that note, it's exactly 7:30. And so thank you all for all of your really attentive participation and contribution. Ryan.
Yeah, just before we wrap, I want to thank Ruth for her service to the committee.
Oh my gosh.
She's been with it for a very long time. She is stepping down, and I just want to thank Ruth. I you know, not having been part of this, I have heard how engaged and really a valuable member of the CSCC that you've been. So I just want to thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ruth. You've been the longest serving member.
I think Craig's still on, so I'm not.
Oh, yeah, Craig. And
Craig
you.
Will beat me, but yes, it's been a few years. But thank you, I appreciate that.
And we, Colleen and I, decided that we want to organize a happy hour for all current and past members.
Oh, fun! Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and thank you so much, Ruth. We will really miss you.
You're quite welcome. You'll get somebody good. Karen Ulick will appoint a new person for Ward 6.
Well, thank you for all your hard work on this committee. Take care, everyone.
It's not quite a smoking jacket, Colleen, but I did go full undershirt.
I'm disappointed. I was teasing Patrick that since he was off camera and off duty now, that I envisioned him sitting there in his smoking jacket with a bourbon.
He stopped recording, right, Ryan?